Welcome to Discovery One Chapter 6, which is all about network services. All the nice, fun, wonderful things like HTTP, FTP, and every other various protocol that you might possibly ever think about using on your network or the internet. So, before we actually get into the material, do we have any questions on anything previous, or any of the labs, or anything like that?
I'm still not seeing a lot of the later chapter labs. Is anybody having trouble with them?
I've been fine so far. That's what I'll do today, actually, is send some.
We'd really appreciate it if you send them as you do them.
Yes, please.
Yeah, yeah, especially in my case, where I'm working all day and just have time in the evenings.
Otherwise, it's like, okay, we don't like you because they're late, and now we absolutely hate you with a passion because you've just inboxed me with 300 labs, or whoever.
Yeah, there's nothing more fun than getting a whole chapter 5's worth of 9 labs from someone and go, oh, jeez. Not that they're hard to grade, but it's just like, really? You couldn't have just sent me the...
Yeah.
I always tell Grace, if I don't send them right after I do them, I won't remember. So I have to do it now.
By the way, what was that whole inbox thing and inbox not being a verb?
Yeah, I saw that, as I said to Carrie, but that doesn't make sense, because I can spam you, and the spam folder's right under the inbox.
No, it's not. There's drafts between the inbox and the spam folder. You're assuming that we're using the spam folder, so you...
No, I don't know where it is. My one doesn't even have a spam folder, so there we go.
You're using Outlook, aren't you? Yes, it has a junk folder.
Yeah, it's got a junk folder, yes, not Outlook a spam does. Folder.
That's the same thing. Microsoft calls it junk mail, to not offend any vegetarians.
Alright, so, let's go ahead and get into the material here. Okay, so we have, client-server interaction, all the nice, wonderful, good things that go along with it. Okay, so let's just see who can define way from way back in maybe what chapter 2 or 3 what servers do.
They send information that's requested by clients.
Very good. Okay, so then what do clients do? And Aiden, you're not allowed to answer this one.
Fine.
Request information from servers, or request information or resources, I guess.
And there you go. Yeah, that's it. Your servers basically serve out information your clients request it. Easy enough. Okay. And then they just throw an activity in right quickly. Let's see. Oh, okay. This is a fairly straightforward one. So, you're given a request, and then you have to match it to various services. So, what I'll do is I'll give you the request, and then I'll read off the services. So, your first one says, I need the IP address of this website so I can connect to it. So, we have... your choices of DNS, Telnet, email, DHCP, web, or FTP. Is everybody in chat?
Yep,
looks like it. Okay, so, yeah. So, which service would that be? And the question again. And yes, that would be DNS. Number 2 says, I need my IP address, subnet mask, and default gateway. And yes, that would be DHCP. So, let's see. Number 3 says, I need to transfer this file to a local server and make sure that it is received. Very good. That is FTP. Let's see. Number 4 says, I need to connect to a remote server and run some commands. Yes, that is Telnet. Of course, the other one they should have said is, I want to go play a MUD.
Yeah, I get that.
That probably would have given it away.
A lot of people don't realize MUD.
I'm finally here.
They didn't get too long. They didn't get too far. We got it fixed.
Yay.
Cool deal. What were you saying, Kerry? I didn't quite catch that.
I was just saying that people wouldn't necessarily guess that a MUD uses Telnet, especially if they were using like VIP MUD or whatever. They might even not even realize.
That's how I connected to MUDs. Back in the and Windows didn't even accept the Telnet connection as open, so it kept bringing up the auto disconnect dialog every 15 minutes until I figured out how to stop.
Fun times.
I don't know why that would happen, but let's move on.
Yeah, I was looking to see where we were going. Okay, number 5 says, I need to request a web page from a web server. Yep, that is actually, it's HTTP, although they have it labeled as web. how nice of them.
Well, I suppose if they might miss web, it could be secure or not. That would be why.
Yeah, valid point. I didn't actually think about that, but that is true. Let's see. I'm not sure if anybody can figure out number 6. I need to send some email to a friend. No, that's wrong. It's not
that
email.
Has to be SMTP.
Yeah. I'm not exactly sure why they wanted to put that in there, but yes, it is email. Or SMTP in that case, because you are sending out email. Okay. So, any questions on that?
Not so far.
Alright, so let's move on, and we will talk about the role of protocols in client-server communication. Okay. So, we have the application protocol, which defines format of requests between your clients and your servers. They go back and they use HTTP a lot for this, but it would pretty much cover any of the protocols, SMTP, FTP. But they do a lot of HTTP examples. So they have so they talk about the application protocol. Then they talk about transport protocol, which manages all the conversations between your clients and your servers. Now, there's two different transport protocols that they're going to talk about. And we'll get into that in a minute. But they also talk about, for transport protocol, they talk about TCP, which formats your messages into segments, and it gives flow control and acknowledgement of packets that are sent and received. Now, they talk about that under your transport protocols, but there is another protocol that they do get into, which is UDP, which is your user datagram protocol. And we'll get into both of those in just a minute, but I figured I'd throw it here just because that's where they were talking about it was under transport. Okay. So the other protocol that they talk about is, they call it your internetwork protocol, but I'm sure everybody's heard of it as your internet protocol, which is IP. And it takes your segments that are formatted from TCP, and it will take those and it will format them into packets. That's where your IP addresses come in. Then you have network access protocols, which handle your data link management and your physical transmission. Your data link protocols format your packets. Yeah, your data link protocols format your packets into frames, which is where your MAC addresses come in. And then your physical transmission protocols define how bits are represented and how they're supposed to be sent and received on whatever media you happen to be transmitting on. Okay, that's just a quick little thing that they went through about the protocols that are going to be used. Questions?
Which reference model is that? I always get confused between OSI and the other one.
That's OSI.
Well, that's going to... Well, yeah, that's going to be... Well, no, wait a minute. Yeah, that's, I guess, going to be OSI, but...
Well, there's no data link in right the TCP now, model, because it's a network access layer.
That's true. Although they broke the network access layer down.
So generally we use the OSI model for this kind of thing rather than TCP/IP, or am I overcomplicating my life?
This course doesn't really cover the OSI reference in great detail. It sort of skims past it and sort of mentions the terms, but it doesn't delve into it, so... Don't worry about it until it confuses you. Assume OSI unless we tell you otherwise.
Okay.
Generally, in my networking experience and my networking courses that I've taken, most of the time reference goes to OSI reference model. Very rarely have I ever seen it done through the TCP/IP model, but there are always exceptions. Okay, so they talk in here about TCP and UDP, which I sort of briefly skimmed over in the previous section. So anything that is on the internet, any of your common network services are going to use your internet protocol to take care of your messages. Anything going back and forth will generally use your internet protocol. Now, your internet protocol is mainly concerned with the structure, addressing, and routing of packets. And it also defines how delivery takes place. Now, they talk about two different transport protocols. They talk about TCP, which is your transmission control protocol. And they talk about UDP, which is your user datagram protocol. Now, both of these are used by the internet protocol because they're transport protocols, so they have to be used there. Otherwise, nothing's going to get sent or received. What they say here, if you need acknowledgements on your packets, you're going to use TCP. So, your TCP is going to be more useful for most of your common internet applications. So, what happens is your TCP, what they were talking about earlier, breaks the messages into segments. And then it goes and sends it down and it encapsulates them into packets. And TCP keeps track of how many segments have been sent per host and application. So it will know if something has not had an acknowledgement, and then it will resend that particular part. And that's pretty much TCP. So yeah, if you need acknowledgements, you're going to use TCP. Otherwise, you're going to use UDP, because you don't get the acknowledgements if segments and packets are lost. Well, they're just lost. UDP is actually kind of a little bit better for speed, because you don't have the acknowledgements. And it's actually good for network bandwidth. I don't want to say limitations, but that's probably about the only word I can think of here. Because it doesn't use the acknowledgments, then you don't have the network slowing down to keep track of them. And they talk about UDP being better for streaming applications like internet radio. Because obviously... I mean,
why?
Obviously, you don't want
to. You think it would be a better guy?
Yeah.
Have these guys think about it.
Well, yeah, does anybody
that's
know
a good
why
question.
It's better?
That's a good question. Why would it be better?
I suppose because it's a constant stream, you want the extra speed, and if you lose a little bit of stuff, it doesn't really matter too much. Like, it might buffer or clip or whatever, but it's not just gonna epically break. So I guess it doesn't really matter. You don't need those acknowledgements. Also, I guess if you've got 15 people assigned to the one, like, subscribed to the same stream, all those acknowledgements coming back to you would clog things rather badly, I guess.
Things wouldn't get resent anyway if they got lost, I would suspect.
But the wrinkle is we don't use UDP for right. internet streaming radio. That's sort of the wrinkle there. I know the notes say we do, but we don't. They're TCP.
Really?
Have you ever been listening to much Room FM and had it do this as a stream decided it was breaking up and you can listen to the X thing after the... That's TCP.
I thought it was UDP as well. Not just because...
No, it's not.
I thought I had actually...
Yeah, that's true. Things just get delayed and either cut off completely or... So when there's a lag time, is that because an acknowledgement has not been sent, or is that just because... nothing has actually arrived? I mean, is there some kind of correction in those streams then? I suppose there is.
If you're using TCP and you get a lot of delays, then yes, it's because of the acknowledgements having to go back and forth. But there are other things that can come into play, like network congestion, that will kind of delay things, but like I said, it could eventually end up boiling down to the acknowledgements that could cause a delay.
Yeah, it could be either. You could either have the acknowledgements delaying you, as Brian says, or you could have the fact that the stuff just hasn't arrived. You don't know which is the problem, because if something has arrived and it hasn't been acknowledged, the sender has no way to know that it got there. So it's sort of a chicken and egg problem. I'm going to do some research, but I'm pretty sure that Shoutcast is TCP. That's how you can have a listener count. If you didn't have TCP, how would you count the number of listeners?
Shoutcast is TCP.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I was playing around with it a little bit ago. I was playing around with it last
interestingly,
year.
Also, they have an MP3 the server admin can set to say play if disconnected from server. So I'm assuming it downloads it to the computer. Oops, this server's broken, and then it plays that if you get disconnected. So that would be TCP, I guess.
I'm actually wondering, based on the whole TCP and UDP discussion, I'm actually wondering how many services would actually use UDP, because
Skype does, I believe.
I think Skype does. Yeah.
It uses both. So you've got TCP for presence detection, which is how you tell whether users are online and offline, but then you've actually got UDP for the voice traffic. DNS uses UDP. That's probably a big one that uses UDP. Ventrilo uses both TCP and UDP. It's an oddball. It's got TCP for synchronization, and it's got UDP for transport. Various other protocols that use UDP. I've got a mental blank. There's a few. NTP is UDP. Sort of stuff that doesn't require the reliability. VoIP is UDP. The session initiation protocol is TCP, but the actual voice stream is UDP.
Yeah. Because I've actually seen when I was playing around with configuring stuff on Linux that there's UDP and TCP and UDP ports that you can set up. So some of it just, that was kind of an interesting one to me. So, okay. Any questions so far?
Not from...
Alright. Go ahead, Aiden.
No, I said not from...
Oh, okay. Alright. They have an activity here. You have to decide whether the statements use TCP or UDP. So we'll fly through this one real quick. Alright. First statement says uses acknowledgements to guarantee delivery. And yes, that is TCP. Let's see. Number two says better suited for voice transmissions. Yes, that is Yep, that is UDP. Number three says does not retransmit packets that have been dropped. Well, that's a unanimous one, and yes, that is UDP. Number four says use for applications like streaming video. Yes, that would be UDP as well. Number five says use for applications like HTTP. Yes, that would be TCP. Okay, that looks like everybody's got a good grasp on that. Alright. So, the next section they go into is TCP IP port numbers. Alright. So, does anybody want to tell me what the destination port is for? Aiden, go ahead.
That's the port that the information is being sent to, or the packet is being sent to.
Yes, that's part of it. Does anybody know the other part?
Maybe you want to talk about what ports do before we get into what the destination port is. Does anybody...
Mm.
Okay. Alright. Your ports basically are just a number assigned on the computers. And basically what happens is you have your source and you have your destination. Now, what I was getting into with that, your destination ports are used to determine which service or services are being requested. And it also does, like Aiden said, it's determines like which where it's going to, in a way. But the destination port is mainly used to figure out what is being requested, what service, whether it's FTP, HTTP, HTTPS, etc. And those are all pretty common. And we'll get into those in just a little bit. Now, your source ports are used to basically start or initiate the conversations, and they're randomly generated. Your destination ports are pretty well set. And there are some things that we'll get into with those in just a bit. Now, what they talk about in your notes, your source and your destination ports are put into your segments, and then they go into your packets, and then you end up with what's considered a socket, which is your source, your destination, IP address, and ports. So what happens is, say you have a computer that wants to request a web page, since that's what they pretty commonly use throughout this chapter. So say your computer's like, say, 192.168.1.105. So you get that, you get your source port, which is randomly generated, we'll say 1304, just as an easy number, just because it's one that I just picked out. So you get those two. Those are your source IP and port. And then say you want to request a web page from QCAT, which I don't have the IP right off the top of my head, but it's in the notes a little further down, because I have it for a couple other points.
203.101.99.234, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. So then your web page finds that, or your DNS server finds that out, then it sends it to that, and it sends it to port 80. So then QCAT recognizes your particular request versus somebody else's based on your source and destination port and IP, which make up your socket. So that's kind of where all that plays in. So, questions on that?
I have a comment if there are no questions.
Well, appears the floor is yours for your comment, Carrie.
I was just going to say the reason we have ports is so we can differentiate between multiple combinations of connections. So, say for example, you open a connection to Facebook, and then you open another connection to Facebook, and another connection to Facebook, or you open three Google windows. The source port on your computer is what differentiates all of the three different sessions. So, source port 1 to Google will be 1050, next one will be 1051, other one will be 1052. Otherwise, if you had all of the stuff destined to Google, how would the computer figure out which of the three sessions it was talking to if it didn't have some way to differentiate them?
And thus, that's also how websites can block excess numbers of connections at the same time, I assume.
Kind of. You can block on source IP, you don't tend to block on source port, but you could.
What I mean is, I think QCAT only lets me have four or five connections or something like that, so...
No, it doesn't. That's Internet Explorer.
Oh. Well, I've seen some websites anyway that do limit the number of connections you can have to them.
Yeah, the point is that if you're downloading on Internet Explorer, there's an upper limit on how many things you can download at once. We're not sort of going into that, but basically it's stupid to download 10 things at once. If you've only got 200k a second down and you download 10 things at once, you're only going to get 20k per second for each thing that you're downloading. But if you're downloading 5 things at once, you're going to get 20k a second for each thing. So that's why they limit the number of concurrent downloads.
Okay, any questions on anything we've covered so far? Okay, not hearing anything. We will go into application protocols and services. And this is where I had the IP for QCAT. Alright, so, you have your domain name service, which is abbreviated DNS. So, what happens here, is you get these computers or these servers that will take human readable names like www.qcat.org and they'll translate them out to the IP address of 203.161.99.234. That's where I had the IP address. which one of those would you rather remember? QCAT.org or that nice, long, wonderful IP address?
QCAT.
QCAT seems easiest, yeah.
Is it worth asking how they do that, or is that just something I don't want to go into?
DNS. I have a web page that says, on zone edit, that says edit zone, QCAT.org, add record, www. www is an A record for 203.101.99.234. That was part of my job as a system admin to set that up.
Oh, okay. And so it just reads that page and goes, okay.
No. That gets into DNS.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. My DNS server just accesses that, and that tells it.
No. That page makes it easy for me to set it up.
It's going
to
go into it in a second.
Okay.
Yeah, they talk about DNS here in just a second, as far as how it actually works. But as far as how if that's what you're wanting to know, how the DNS actually works, yes, they do actually talk about that. Which is what I'm getting ready to go into now. Alright. So, what you have, your domain name servers have all these nice, wonderful, human-readable host names. And they associate the IP addresses with those host names. And if the DNS server that you're connected to doesn't know the IP address of a particular host, it will go and send out a query to another DNS server. And hopefully that DNS server will know the IP address of the host that you're looking for. If it doesn't, it'll go and send it out to another one. And if nobody has any idea of the IP address, then you get that nice, wonderful request timed out that everybody hates to see on their ping command.
No you don't. If it doesn't know the IP address, you get host not found. If it knows the IP address and can't get to it, you get request timed out.
Oh, okay. Then either the notes have it wrong. Either the notes have it wrong, or I put it down wrong.
I'll have a look. But every time... Because remember it says, when you go into Internet Explorer, it says Internet Explorer is unable to load the site, rah, 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 or something. And it comes up with that weird error box, that friendly error.
Oh, that error 404 or whatever it is.
No, not 404. The one where it actually cannot reach the website, and it's... yeah, it's a friendly
that
box.
Cannot find server dialog, yeah.
Yeah, cannot find server. That's the one.
Yeah, that's an old friend of mine.
Yeah, but it's all done by tables. So that's the good fun part. And the DNS port is 53. So any DNS requests go to port 53, and the DNS servers pick them up there. Any questions on DNS?
Not for me.
Alright. Then we'll move on to web clients and servers. Alright. So, everybody's pretty well familiar with HTTP and the fact that it goes through port 80. So, you have various languages that they call them languages that are used for web pages like HTML, XML, or XHTML. And then, of course, you get PHP, which is a whole other thing, but all that's done on your web servers. Alright. So, you have your regular HTTP, which is your Hypertext Transfer Protocol. Then, you have HTTPS, which is your Secure Hypertext Transfer Protocol. And that is if you ever go, well, you should go onto that as much as you possibly can. So if any sessions are done with HTTPS, they are transferred over to port 443. And that's pretty much all there is on that's dealing with the HTTP protocol.
It's interesting with those ports. I always get that confused with, I think it's IMAP.
Yeah, IMAP's coming up, but it's 143.
Any other questions? Under, I was going to say there's a list of these under C, Windows, System 32, drivers, etc. And you can actually pull open the services file in there, and they're all listed in a text file. I'll just check that part.
Oh, wow.
Wow. And we
I'll have a look at that.
Making us memorize all these?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're mean cavi instructors. We make you memorize them all.
There's a good little table of them in ITU Chapter 15, if I remember correctly, too. That's something I used as a study resource.
Yeah, percent system root percent backslash system 32 backslash drivers. So C Windows, system 32 drivers, etc. There is a file that if you copy services to services.txt and open it up in Notepad, it's got a list of the ones that Windows knows by default. No using that for cheating in tests, people.
I haven't even thought to look at that because I knew Linux had it. I knew Linux had the services file because that's when I was playing with a little bit, but I didn't even think to look for it in Windows.
Well, a lot of Windows' TCP stack is based on the Unix TCP stacks, and if you dig around, you'll find that there's an incredible amount of similarity because they basically did re-implement the same stack and all the same stuff, so yep, those files are lying around, you just got nowhere to look.
So does that mean you could teach it another one or change the port or something for another one by just adding that to that file? Because I know someone who had, I think it was Telnet, running on some weird port, like, I don't know, 3201 or something odd.
No, that changes how the system refers to the services, so if it has port 3201, it'll show up as Telnet. That's not where you change where things listen, that's somewhere else.
Oh, okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah, so if, let's say we're going between the two we were just looking at that were separated, just happened to be by 63, between, what, 80 and 143, between IMAP and HTTP, is there... How were those ports originally assigned, or what is the separation in between them? How were those values? I mean, not every port is assigned, as far as I know, by default. I mean, in certain, even in certain lower ranges, is it? So how were those originally arrived at, or for what reasons? If anyone has a, if there's any logical thing that could be explained there, I'd like to know it.
IANA, the Internet Assigned Numbers Authority, assigned them, and they're listed in the RFCs. I don't think there's a relationship between IMAP and HTTP. They're two completely different protocols. One is web, one is email retrieval. We just picked those out of the air.
I know no relation. I'm just, was just noticing they were separated by, you know, a certain number. I don't know if there's any ports. I can't think of any from off the top of my head that are commonly used, but there very well may be in between those two. But do you know any reason why they determined those original numbers at all, any of them?
They basically started assigning things as they thought they were useful. And then they made up more protocols and dropped those into the spaces. They left gaps for things that they thought would be used later, and then they dropped protocols into the gaps that they found later. So things like daytime and charge in, which are ports 13 and 14, and discard, which is 9, I think, they're all the low ones. And then we had FTP at 20 and 21, and Telnet at 23, and SMTP at 25. I don't know historically why they didn't allocate at 24. You have to ask them. There is no magic rule.
Okay. I guess that's kind of what I was wanting to know. Thank you.
All right. So let's talk about our very wonderful friend FTP. Okay. So FTP actually starts on port 21. And so all the requests for any FTP sessions open on port 21. Then once you actually go in and you need to do any data transfers, it switches over to port 20 to do all your data transfers. And this is like, this is really seamless. Unless you're actually running some kind of network monitoring software. You'll never know it. But that's probably one of the more interesting ones, because that's, I think that's about the only one that'll do anything like that. And I'm not exactly sure why it does that, so but it I just know it does. But any questions on that, on FTP?
It separates the data and the control channels because it was easier to program that way. You don't have to be figuring out what on your connection is data and what on your connection is control. You can have two different ports open and just watch the control port for the control messages and data for the data.
Well, that makes sense.
Telnet actually uses 22 and 23, I think, also.
No, 22 is SSH. No. I promise.
Yeah, standard telnet is 23. Then you have SSH, which is secure shell, which is 22. Two totally separate things. All right, so let's get on to everybody else's other friend, which is email. All right, so everybody, I'm sure, is familiar with SMTP, which is your simple mail transfer protocol. Now that is generally on port 25, although port 465 can be used in certain situations. 465 is used for secure secure transfers, if I'm not entirely mistaken.
So that's what fouled up that time.
If you have to run... somebody have a question or a comment?
Oh, no, I just had problems with that in Outlook once, and that's apparently why, because it thought I should be using 465 when I wasn't.
That's different. 465 is a secure email port, and 25 isn't, and a lot of ISPs block outbound access to port 25, so unless you send out on the secure port, which is 465, you will not only be giving your username and password to everybody on the internet, your authentication creds on port 25 unless you secure it, but you'll also get blocked as a spammer by a whole stack of firewalls, which is why you use 465.
Mm-hmm.
So, your SMTP is used, obviously, when you want to send mail to servers, or actually another host on another person on the same server. It will go through SMTP, and then mail server to mail server will also use SMTP for the transfer if it has to go between two different servers, like Gmail and say Hotmail will use SMTP to go back and forth between them. So that's SMTP. Now, one of the protocols for receiving is POP3. Now, I'm sure everybody has heard of that. Now, does somebody know what port that is on?
110.
Yes, that would be 110.
Yay.
very good. And I think, yeah, they do cover that in IT Essentials. So.
They do. I was seeing it in my sleep at one point trying to memorize it.
Yeah, fun stuff.
110 is not secure, though, is it?
It can be, but it's not normally.
I don't know. Is there a secure POP3 port?
Yep.
Oh, that's 995.
993 or 995, which is it?
I could look it up in its services, but it's 995.
Is IMAP, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. The problem is that there are four different secure implementations of POP. There's a POP, there's SPOP, there's POP-S, POP-3S. There's about four different ways of doing it. So it's not as simple as 995, but let's just pretend it is for now.
Yeah. I had fun with my email server here when they decided to change their configurations around. And, coincidentally, I didn't get the email. So, I had to call up TextPort, and they said, oh yeah, you gotta change your ports and security settings and all that good fun stuff, because we switched over to Gmail. And they're still using POP3. Anyway. Okay. And the, last protocol for email is IMAP, which your standard port is 143 and your secure port is 993, as we've have discussed. Now, there is a really good couple good advantages for IMAP over POP3. The main one being that IMAP stores all of your mail on the server itself, so you can sync it between multiple devices, which I have found to be quite useful, especially when I'm syncing mail between my phone and Cisco Vision, and then I can go back and just check it on my computer and make sure I haven't missed anything, or haven't just decided to skip over it on my phone. So, and with POP3, one, unless you change settings in your mail client, well, POP3 is going to, your mail client's going to wipe everything off the server as soon as it checks it. So, if you can do it, my personal recommendation would be to use IMAP. And that's after only having used it for a couple of months. I do so like it a lot better than POP3.
I made you do that, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
I didn't give you a choice.
And, well, I'm just gonna have to say, thank you for forcing me to use IMAP, because it is so much better than POP3.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, we have a bad connection, though. IMAP can be really annoying with all those error messages when it's trying to, you know, sync automatic backups and stuff online instead of locally. So you have to depend on your connection. It can vary. Well, I know I can turn it off, but I mean, I would generally, well, a lot of times I would want it. So it's, yeah, it's, it certainly depends on my situation, which I use. I've actually set up both with the same email client at the same time so I could switch between them depending on different needs. But I usually leave my POP stuff on the server and then delete it manually when I'm ready to. It's an extra backup if I'm using POP.
Ah, we used to, as an ISP, we would delete people's mail that was left on the server for more than 7 days. If they'd set that setting, we would knock out their email for them, and it was in our terms of service. It was like, you would lose it. It's like, we will keep your stuff for 7 days. If you don't delete it, we will. Because then they'd come in through webmail and delete it off their servers, and what a lot of people would do is they'd go in through webmail, and they would check their email through webmail, delete the big ones they didn't want to suck down, and so we'd end up paying for the volume on the big ones, and then they would just pull the little ones down. So, yeah, 7 days and you're out. I must say that the feature killer for me, if the Braille Sense had an IMAP client, I'd buy it. It's that simple.
Oh, yeah. I don't think any of the note takers do.
I believe the icon does.
That would really surprise me, but that would be interesting. Too bad it's kind of but anyway.
Yeah, let's switch into Android, so that might...
If talking about Gmail, Brian, that does support IMAP. You just have to change the ports. There's an article on it, so if you are using POP3 with that, don't. It does work with IMAP beautifully. I use it all the time.
Yeah, I use IMAP in Gmail.
So do I.
I have both.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's just the implementation that my service provider decided to use or what the deal is, but they have chosen to... It's kind of a weird implementation, because it's POP3, and even though the mail is off the server, it still shows up when you check it through webmail, and it does still pull it up, so it's a weird implementation that they've done with it.
Well, I always set my Gmail...
That's one.
Wow. He got kicked off right in the middle of a sentence. Wow.
Interesting.
I've never seen that before. Yeah, that... I've never seen that.
That's awesome. That's new.
I was going to say, what's that protocol? What's that bling protocol?
That would be bad internet connection protocol. The last two that they talk about here, they talk about IM clients and voice clients, and there's no actual real protocols to deal with these. Ports vary depending on which clients you use, so
actually
not too much to
SIP
say.
Is around because SIP is a VoIP protocol.
That's one I'm not familiar with.
SIP is a session initiation protocol, and it's used for when you establish VoIP calls. It's used for all sorts of RTP, but generally it's VoIP.
Huh, interesting. That's one I've heard of it, but I've never actually played with it to see what it did, so that's a new one for me.
Zone by Phone actually had, or I don't know if they still do, but they had a SIP thing you could use with their phone service. And I played with it, and it worked okay. I forget which client I played with.
Push to Talk uses SIP, actually. If you look at the guts of Push to Talk on the Nokias and stuff, that's a SIP thing.
Oh, okay.
Interesting. But yeah, just it really though with the IM and voice clients, ports vary, protocols well vary. If that's what you want to call them, because they're all proprietary anyway, depending on your clients. And that's pretty much that. Questions?
I can't think of any IM clients besides maybe, like, what is that thing, Lotus, whatever there that is. I can't think of too many IM clients that don't do voice chat as well. I was literally trying to think of something going, I don't know. Even Bitwise does.
IRC doesn't.
That's true.
Yeah, IRC doesn't, but that's technically not an IM client, is it?
Oh, we should fight about
enough,
it.
I guess.
It's chat, IM. I mean, Windows Live Messenger never used to do voice. I mean, you've got to keep in mind that everybody's jacked voice into their IM client in the last year or so. When these notes were written, that wasn't the case.
No, Windows Messenger always did, Gary. It never did it particularly well, but like the old Windows Messenger that I used to use. Yeah, it did have it.
No, the really old
start
one.
Talking, the start talking.
Like no, the very something. First ones. Like Windows 95 versions, like when you weren't even...
Oh, okay, yeah.
Your definition of old isn't theirs. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Even AIM had it.
Oh, okay.
AIM's actually was great. If you had an awful connection, it would work pretty well. It sounded bad, but my god, it would work on dial-up.
What? That's something I never managed to make Windows Messenger do.
You need universal plug and play enabled. Let's not go there. But once you had UPnP enabled, it would go like a mad thing.
Hmm.
I got it to work, even Windows Live, but it likes to mute the volume on me. I thought it was just deck talk, but it even does it on other computers.
Okay. Run through the last little bit of this chapter, because I think we can scroll through this quite quickly. Alright. So they talk about different port numbers, which majority of these we've already gone through. Okay. So in here they talk about your ports ranging from 1 to 65,535. And they split this into three different port groups. And thanks to ICANN, which is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, all these ports have been split into three different categories. And ICANN is the one that assigns and manages all these nice, wonderful port numbers that we have to memorize at some point in our IT careers. Okay, so they talk about three different categories, first being well-known, which go from port 1 to 1023. These are all of our nice, wonderful ports that we just talked about, and then some. Your registered ports are those that range from 1024 to 49,151. These are either source or destination, depending on what you want to do, and depending on how the servers are set up. Now, your private ports are 49,152 to 65,535. And these are primarily, according to the notes, used as source ports. Okay. Then they have this nice, wonderful table that has all of the ports that we've already talked about. Yeah, I think we've talked about the majority of these, except maybe DHCP, which is port 67 for the client. And 68 for the server. Quite frankly, I'm not sure why that would end up being that way. Okay. They talk about 69 being TFTP, which is your trivial FTP.
Which is what, exactly?
TFTP is... quite frankly, in my book, a rather old FTP protocol. to be honest, I've never actually seen it in use, although I know it's on most of the Linux boxes. You can enable it. But it is an FTP protocol.
Oh, okay.
It's used for transferring configuration files to routers, uploading and downloading firmwares to certain routers that don't use a web interface. It's very lightweight. It can be used to network boot Windows boxes. So that's sort of what TFTP is all about.
Huh. I've never actually seen that in use. The other port that they don't mention in here is port 137, which is your net BIOS name services. Carrie, any idea what that does? Because that's one I'm not actually too familiar with.
Ah, that's your Windows file sharing, the old stuff. So you got 137, 138, 139. And they're the things that are used for mapping shared network drives and stuff.
Okay. And the other port that they don't mention in here is 161, which is your simple network management protocol. That one I'm not familiar with that one as much as I probably need to be either.
I wouldn't worry about it at this point. It lets you monitor devices and see how they're going and what they're doing.
Okay. All that good fun stuff. Okay. Well, we got 30 minutes. And this is the last section, I think, of this chapter.
And then the quiz.
Yep. This is the last section of the chapter, so... this is talking about layered models and protocols. So this is where your OSI reference model comes in and the TCP/IP model. So the first section they talk about in here is protocol interaction. And this is where your this is kind of how the layered models are set up. They're set up with what's called the protocol stack. So you go from your highest level protocols down to your which is your application protocols down to the lowest level, which are your physical layer protocols. So you go from your application down as things need to be sent, and then as they're received they go from the physical layer up. And there are some benefits to the layered model. First one being that it assists in protocol design because protocols that operate at specific layers have defined information that they act upon and a defined interface to the layers above and below. Another benefit is that they foster competition because products from various vendors can work together. And they also prevent technology or capability changes from one layer from affecting other layers. And it also provides a common language to describe network functions and capabilities. Okay, any questions before we move into the two layered models that they're going to talk about? Okay, so they talk about two different models. They talk about the TCP/IP model, which was, according to the notes, was the first one that came out. Okay, here we go. There are four layers to this. It starts at the application layer and goes down to transport, internet, and network access, which were the layers that they talked about previous. Your application pretty much does the formatting. Your transport layer does all the transporting, or at least sets it up for transporting. Then your internet layer packs everything in, gives it the IP address, and sends it on to the network access layer, which in the TCP/IP model is where it's actually sent across the network. Okay. Questions on the TCP/IP model.
So that's the four-layer one. So we've been working with that one, although.
No, we've been talking about TCP/IP, but we've been referencing it to the OSI reference model.
Okay.
He's explaining both.
That's what I meant.
I think I may need to Google some mnemonics, so we're just going to do that.
I can remember some of the TCP/IP ones.
Yeah, the OCI ones are good, so I'm going to get some when we get
them. Well, to be honest, the TCP/IP
model... Just
don't
throw away that sausage pizza.
Yeah.
The TCP/IP model is actually probably an easier one to remember because there's only four layers. But, as far as my own personal networking experience and any college courses I've taken, I've actually never seen that referenced. The one that they primarily reference, at least in the computer science courses I took, is the OSI model, which is where we're going next. So, the OSI reference model I can't remember when it was created, but it was, I think, in late 80s, maybe, if I remember somewhat correctly.
OSI, no, it was 84.
Okay, we'll go with that. okay, so this actually has seven layers to it versus the four of the TCP/IP model. You still have your application layer, and they add in the presentation layer and the session layer. Usually, if you're talking about the OSI reference model, they just kind of group those three into one. But in general, you're going to see it listed with all seven layers. So you go application at the top, then presentation, session, transport, network, data link, and the physical layer. Alright. And your application layer still does pretty much what it says. It formats everything as it needs to. Your presentation layer kind of takes everything, makes sure it's formatted as it needs to be for transporting. Your session layer is what opens up all your sessions, whether it's FTP, HTTP, or any of the other network services. Your transport is pretty much self-explanatory. That sends that pretty much packages everything up from the other three layers above it. Your network layer still continues the packaging process. Then you come down to your data link layer. Oh, your network layer, if I remember correctly, your network layer is where your IP addresses come in. Your data link layer is where your MAC addresses come into play. And then your physical layer is where everything's sent across your network media of choice. So, there's a quick rundown of the OSI reference model. And probably as much as you'll need to know for this course. Alright. Questions. Okay. And that's it for the chapter.
I've got some mnemonics for you guys. I will give you the clean ones, but there are some very not. I'll put the link in chat. You can, if I can just get back to. Let's see. People don't need this stuff presented anyway.
Oh, that must be the OSI reference model.
All penguins stand too near deep pools. American presidents should try new dating practices.
I did not have sex with...
Absolutely. Please do not take salespeople's advice.
There's the Australia Post sucks, they never deliver parcels.
Yep, that one's good. Phyllis did networking till she passed away. What else have we got?
There's really dirty ones, too.
Oh, yeah. Please, programmers, do not throw sausage pizza away. All parents should teach new dads parenting. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, some of these are great. All people studying this need drastic psychotherapy. I like that one, too. Yep, Australian Post sucks. They never deliver parcels is here. Please don't network these stupid people again.
Funny.
I'm so gonna have to take a look at that link.
Yeah, let me put this in here. God.
Now, there is a warning of there are some really dirty ones, so you have been warned.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There it is. So you can either laugh or you can go, oh my dear. The actual other pages on this site look like they might be good as well. OSI7layer.com.
Oh, that was nice. Sappy didn't read me the whole web address. That was kind of cool.
It's spam.
Yeah, it knows if it's long.
Oh, that's
Didn't read any of it for me. It just, but Jules told me it was there, so yeah.
That's why I told you it was there, because...
Well, yeah, I know. Just kind of nice that...
Yeah, I didn't, it didn't read it for me either. But I'll look at it in a minute. Okay. I'll put it to a vote here. Do we want to take this quiz? Because I can tell you from previous previous class that there is a lot of matching.
We probably should.
Yeah, well, you can. It's really tricky.
Yeah, you've
because
got time.
You can't see all the. You've got time. You can give it a go.
Okay. All right. We'll give it a go. First couple aren't bad, but there is a lot of matching to do with this quiz. So, all right, we'll give it a go here. Number one, what happens when part of a message using TCP is not delivered to a destination host? Okay, A says the sender resends the entire message. B says the sender sends a request to find out what happened. C says nothing. TCP doesn't check for errors or missing data. D says the part of the message that is missing is retransmitted. Answer now. Yes, it is D. The part of the message that is missing is retransmitted. And here we go, with a bunch of matching. Alright, number two says match statement. Match correct statement to the service. Okay. So, there's, I believe about five or six different services. But I'm going to go ahead and read the first statement first, and then we'll go through the services. Okay. Your first statement says, a user types in a URL, and a page loads in the client browser. Is that a domain name service, email, I'm not through reading all the answers. is it domain name service, email, file transfer, dynamic host configuration, web service, or telnet? So, now you can answer. Okay, according to that, this would be the web service, because it's not actually... It just says that the user types in the URL and the page loads. Let's see. Here we go. A user uploads a new file to his or her website. What would that be? Yes, that would be, well, that would be FTP, or the way they put it, file transfer. Okay. A user requests a website by typing in its name. Yes, that would be DNS. Let's see. A workstation gets its IP address automatically. Very good. That would be DHCP. Yes, that would be. That would be your dynamic host configuration protocol. Okay. This one's an interesting one. Internet protocols allow users to send messages to each other over the internet. So this one they don't actually give away.
What services we have?
Telnet and email are the only two left.
Technically, it could be either, I guess.
I have a feeling email's what they're looking for.
Me too.
And yes, email is what they're looking for. You are correct. Because the last question, or the last statement says, a network technician logs into a workstation from a remote site. Yes, that's Telnet. More matching. Okay. It says match the items with corresponding term. Not all items are used. Okay. So the terms they use are, or the terms you're given are, DNS server, common DNS port number, and domain name. And it looks like, let me see how these answers are laid out. Oh, okay. All right, I see what they want here. Okay, so you're given the three terms, your DNS server, your common DNS port number, and domain name. So they give you a bunch of statements, and some of them are probably going to match, some of them aren't. So the first item that they give you to match is port 47. And bear in mind that, like I said, there may be some that aren't used, period. Actually, 47's not used at all in what they're giving. What about port 53? Yeah, that's your DNS port. That's your DNS port. Let's see. Just out of curiosity, let's see if anybody remembers what port 80 is used for. Very good, that is HTTP, although it's technically not used in this one, but very good. Okay, so what would Cisco.com be? And if we need the terms again, I can give them again. Yes, that would be a domain name. Okay, so what about the statement that says translates an IP address to a domain name? Let's see. Technically, I think they threw that one in there just to throw everybody off. Because the next statement says translates a domain name to an IP address. Yeah, that would be your DNS. At least that's what they're looking for on that one. That would be your DNS server. And the other one that they have, which they don't actually use, is Linksys at cisco.mail, which interesting way to form a URL or an email address. But not used. Okay, this one says refer to the graphic, but you don't need it for the question, because the question is, which protocol allows you to type www.cisco.com instead of an IP address to open a web page? Is it A, DNS, B, FTP, C, HTML, or D, HTTP? The answer that they're looking for is DNS, because remember, you're putting in cisco.com, and it'll go find the IP address for you. I know that's kind of confusing with the way they've done some of these questions, but they're looking for DNS for that one. Okay, another matching question. Match the term with its corresponding definition. Okay, so we have, your terms are HTML, HTTP, HTTPS, web server, and web client. Your first definition that you have to match says hosts a web page. Yes, that would be a web server. So then what would request the web page? Very good, that would be the web client. Okay, so what about used to create web pages? Yes, that would be HTML. Alright, so what about a secure protocol that uses port 443? And yes, that would be HTTPS. And the last one says protocol commonly used by a web browser. Oh, okay. Very good, that is HTTP. Alright, so this claims to be another matching one, but this should be fairly simple, because you only have to figure out which protocols are used to process email.
I've seen ones that say match the appropriate statement and the choices are true and false.
Yeah, this one only has one. This one only has one category, and it says protocols used to process email. So you have your choices are SMTP. I'll do it this way. I'll do it this way just to make it easier. We'll do it yes or no. Would SMTP fall under that category? Yes, SMTP would fall under that. What about FTP? Very good, that one would not. What about POP3? Yes, that would fall under the category. What about IMAP4? Very, very good. That would fall under there as well. And then you have the last three, which don't actually count for anything. The last three that don't actually count for anything are HTTP, HTML, and DNS. So that's all for that question. Number 7 says, what acronym is associated with making a phone call using the internet? Is it A, IM, B, HTML, C, HTTP, D, SNMP, or D, VoIP? Answer now. Oops, and I messed my lettering up, I think.
You did. Yeah, you did indeed.
Yes, I did. But it's okay, because I think everybody got it right anyway. It is VoIP. Nice. So nice when they give you 5 choices and one of them nice, wonderful things.
5 of them, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we get to match port numbers and protocols. Okay. Yeah, really. Okay. Let's see. Let's see if we can do this from memory. If not, I can always go back to the choices of protocols. So what protocol is port 20 associated with? And yes, it is FTP. Very good. So what about port 23? And majority rules, it's Telnet. Oh, okay. Yeah. Since it came up, I'm going to skip a little bit in order, or skip out of order here. What about port 110? And yes, that one's POP3. 23 is Telnet, 110 is POP3. What about port 53?
We just had that one.
Yes, we did, actually. Very good. It is DNS. Okay. And I did mention this one briefly in passing, but what about port 68? Port 68 is one of the DHCP ports. That's the server port. 67 is the client port. Okay. Let's see. I don't think we need to do that one. It's port 80. Do we really need to do that one? Yes, I think that one's been drilled into everybody's. I think that one's been drilled into everybody's head quite a bit throughout this chapter. That is HTTP. Let's try port 161. Port 161 is your simple network management protocol, SNMP. Yep. It is SNMP, your simple network management protocol. And I think port 443. Hopefully everybody knows that one. Very good. That is the HTTP. Okay. Question 9 is going to be a yes-no answer. And it says, select three protocols that operate at the application level of the OSI reference model. Choose three. So is it ARP? Very good. That does not operate at the application level. What about TCP? No, that doesn't either. Does anybody know what... Anybody remember what layer that operates at?
Transport.
Very good. That would be the transport layer. Okay. So, what about DSL? And no is the correct answer. Nice, wonderful internet technology, but not what we're looking for at the application level. So, what about FTP? FTP does operate at the application level. What about POP3? And yes, DHCP is number two that we're looking for. I mean, well, that just gave that one away. POP3 is number two, and the last one, which I just gave away, is DHCP. Yep, and that's it for that question. Okay, and that's it for the quiz.
That was quite a long one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It probably would have helped had there not been so many matching questions.
I think we need to look at rewriting the quizzes in all seriousness. Like, I know nobody's had time, but we need to sit down and rewrite them to rejig the matching questions. Because if you can see the matches in front of you, it's easy enough. But if you can't, it's not very good orally.
We do them okay in ITE.
There's more in Discovery, though. And you don't match in the exams that often. In Discovery? I haven't seen too many matches in Discovery.
No, I haven't either.
No.
Like, that's the only way to go over your protocols and stuff. I don't know.
Well, if you say what port is HTTP? A, B, C, D. You know, make the multiple choice so you're not caching like six things in your head.
Hey, cool.
Yeah. Alright, any questions, since that's the end of that lecture, any questions before we stop recording?